Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Rim Objects Radio. I'm your host, Jim McKeith. Today, we're going to be talking about the newest flavor of Oxygen, Nougat. Joining me, we have Mark Hoffman.
Hi, everybody.
Carlo.
Hi.
Mike.
Hi.
And Brian. Brian, I didn't get you there. Are you still there?
Hello.
Okay.
Brian's just shy.
That's fine. So everybody's been working real hard on Nougat. We just released Beta 3, which is a huge milestone. It's getting very usable at this point. I thought we maybe just take a minute and go around. Everybody could talk about what their involvement is with Oxygen, so everybody kind of knows where they're at with that. Mark, why don't you go ahead and start?
Okay, so good question. So I'm basically sort of the big picture guy for Oxygen, for Nougat specifically, but for Oxygen in general. So I sort of keep track of where things are going, what kind of features we want, when we want them, and then I bug everybody else to get them done.
That's important.
Yep.
Carlo?
I mainly work on the compiler part of Nougat. The things you don't see, I make them work. That's my job.
So when you're doing your job, we don't notice. Is that what you're saying?
Something like that.
If it's all working, Carlo is doing his job right. But then as soon as something doesn't work, then we know to talk to Carlo. And Mike?
I tend to work with personnel resources as to who's available to work on which project, not just Oxygen, but the other projects that we have as well.
And Brian?
I am responsible for most of the IDE integration, everything from code completion to editors to all the other fun stuff that makes life easier as a programmer.
Excellent. Yeah, that's one thing about working with Oxygen in general. It's not just the Visual Studio IDE. There's definitely a lot of productivity enhancements added on top of that. I love the auto fix it stuff. That stuff's great.
Indeed. Yeah.
So, and just so everybody knows, this isn't the entire team that's involved in Oxygen. It's just the people we thought would be cool for this podcast. So, for those that don't know, what is Nougat? Mark?
Okay, so Nougat basically is the third platform for Oxygen. I mean, as most of our listeners probably know, we have Oxygen for .NET for some 7 years or so now. And then the year before, we introduced Oxygen for Java. And now Nougat, sort of the third pillar, and we bring Oxygen to native iOS and Mac development.
I remember when you'd mentioned the idea of Nougat, and I was like, oh, I hadn't even thought about that, but that's a great idea to have it for there. So, yeah, how's Nougat different from a compiler point of view than the other flavors, though, Carlo?
Well, the first part, of course, is that it doesn't use a virtual machine like the .NET or the Java one, but it creates native code for the platform, and, well, it works quite different. The objects are different with reference counting instead of a garbage collection, and yeah.
So, would it be safe to say that it's more different than either the Oxygen for Java or Oxygen for .NET than they were from each other?
Oh yeah, there are quite a few changes also in the language for the new method names and how things work exactly. Strong references, weak references. Yeah, it's quite different.
So the new method naming, how does that work? I think, Mark, you want to talk about that?
Sure, yeah. So, well, basically, I mean, maybe take a step back. I mean, we said Nougat is Oxygen for Cocoa, for Mac and iOS. But what that means is that it's Oxygen for the Objective-C runtime, really. Because Objective-C is sort of the language and the runtime that the Apple platforms are built on, both iOS and macOS. And that's different in, say, how other platforms like Windows and so on work, where sort of .NET is sort of stacked on top of the OS, where, on macOS and on iOS, at least on the, for the application developer perspective, Objective-C and the Cocoa and the Objective-C runtimes really is the operating system and the native OS APIs that you want to talk to are Objective-C. So with that background, Objective-C is a very verbose language that's built on top of C. And one of the things that makes it unique is that it has these really long method names where instead of having the name and then you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 parameters, the parameters are actually interspersed inside the method name. So basically, there's gaps inside the name where the parameters fit in when you write the call, and that makes it for really readable calls, because you'd say like application did finish launching with options this, option that. And then basically you can read the entire thing as a sentence, and for each parameter, you know exactly what it means. So one thing that was important to us for bringing Oxygen to Objective-C, just like with the other platforms, is that we really wanted to embrace the platform and not fight what's there. And so we wanted to have a special syntax for method calls that embraces these special APIs that sort of are built for getting all the different parameters interspersed within the method names. And as a result, we have this new method syntax where, again, I mean, it's hard to really talk about without seeing it, but where you have the separate parts of the method names, and then each of them is followed by a parentheses and a parameter, and then the next part comes, and again, you got parentheses and the parameter.
You know, it's interesting. C is not a verbose language, but Objective-C is more verbose, with really fits well to Pascal, which is the syntax Oxygen based on, because Oxygen is a more verbose language. So I think it's a really good fit to have this more verbose, readable syntax introduced in Oxygen.
Agreed. Yeah, I think the two fit together really well. The syntax and Pascal in general.
And the result is that when you're reading a method call, you know what each of the parameters are instead of having to guess. So if you're passing a nil in or true or false or something like that, without that syntax, you don't know what that parameter is referring to. But with this syntax, you do know that, oh, nil is the bundle or false is whether.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So one really good example is like you get methods all over the place where you like on a button you have enable animated, right? So you set enabled true, animated true, and you know the first boolean is whether you want to enable it or not, and the second one is whether you want the button to animate or just switch immediately, right? While if you have like a normal C or Pascal or C sharp or whatever syntax, you'd have set enabled true comma true, and you'd have no idea what those two different booleans are for, right?
Exactly.
So anyway, yeah. So I think those method names are a crucial part of what makes Objective-C and the Objective-C platform what it is, and we thought it was important to take that over.
And you know, the thing about that is that when you're reading the Coco and Coco Touch API documentation, that means you're going to have the exact same call.
Exactly, yeah.
So is the new split naming convention, is that something that will be available in other flavors of Oxygen, or is that going to be a NuGet-specific feature?
It's not available right now in the beta, so right now it's NuGet only, but I think in the long run it would make sense, if just for purposes of sharing code between the platforms, for us to bring that over to the other platforms. And of course, like as soon as you would start using that on, say, .NET or Java, you'd be entering an area where your code wouldn't be accessible from, say, C sharp or Java language developers easily anymore. I mean, there's other areas with that as well, because where Oxygen is a superset of what the core platform has, sometimes you sort of venture outside this, what .NET calls CLS compliance, and I don't know what Java calls it, but so basically we could support it for the Oxygen language on .NET and Java, but you couldn't share code that uses this syntax with, I don't know, your fellows using C sharp, right?
So we talked about the naming conventions being something that sets NuGet apart or as a new thing with NuGet. In what ways are NuGet the same as the other versions of Oxygen are out there?
I think in general you could say it's probably more the same than it's different. I think that the difference, I mean, those method names aside, and of course those method names are optional for your own classes that you write. The only place where you really have to use them is where you're calling existing classes. I think the differences are really sort of on the lower levels, like when you delve down into you get to see that, you know, Objective-C runtime is more closely tied to C and native code than the more managed environments you have in Java and C sharp. But other than that, the core language works pretty similar on all three platforms. And of course, that's one of the big selling points, one of the important things that we have. You have one language with really, really minor and subtle differences that don't matter for most of your code that you can use on all the three platforms.
Carlo said earlier that Nougat was harder to implement on the compiler side than the other flavors. But from a user point of view, I think that has been abstracted by the compiler. And it was noticeable, for example, that we've been able to support Nougat for our own products without bringing in specialized people for Xcode, that it was all done internally. Whereas when we started with Java, we had to bring somebody in to help us with the Java side of it.
I know that from my point of view, because I've done some Objective-C with development with Xcode before, and starting using Nougat now, it's just so... And you know what I mean? It's just the way my brain's wired, but it was so much easier for me to understand and to work with Oxygen for Nougat to do Objective or Cocoa development, Cocoa Touch development, than it was to try and use Objective-C. So, yeah.
Agreed, yeah. I mean, me personally, I've been doing Objective-C for like, I don't know, 5 or 6 years now, and I actually love Objective-C and Xcode, but even I'd say, I mean, I just love Nougat. It's just so much nicer. Like, I mean, simple things like where Objective-C really shows its age. We can, like, in Nougat, you can say string plus string to concatenate two strings, right? Just like you would do on .NET or Java. And when Objective-C, you'd have to, like, call string by appending string and call functions to concatenate the thing and everything, right? And, like, it's just, like, it's a whole different level of language, Oxygen, really.
Yeah. Well, and also you have, yeah, there's just a lot more idiosyncrasies, it felt like to me, in Objective-C, little things you have to do differently and that just seem to get in the way of writing code, which Nougat doesn't seem to fall into that. Now, Carlo and Mark, both of you mentioned the Objective-C runtime. What is that and how does that impact Nougat development? Carlo, do you want to take that one?
Well, the Objective-C runtime is actually a very small thing that lets you call the classes and register them. So what happens is a compiler can just say, give me that class, and I call it. It also makes sure you can update your libraries without breaking other things, and it just makes things a lot nicer to use.
Yeah, so I guess putting it in perspective, it's I suppose you could say it's sort of somewhere in the middle between like this sort of huge managed runtime you have for Java and .NET, where basically the runtime takes care of everything, including down compiling your code from IL or JVM code to assembly and running that. And on the other hand, we have like C++ or Delphi, where the compiler generates this CPU native assembly code. And that's just it. Everything is in there and you got nothing that's sort of around to keep track of what your objects do and how things interrelate, right? Objective-C runtime is sort of somewhere in the middle. So you have like it's a more lightweight runtime than C# than .NET or Java, but you have a little bit of it's sort of I like to call it semi-managed when I talk about it once in a while. So it's you get some of the benefits that of the managed runtimes that you have in C# or in .NET and Java, but it's not fully managed really.
So does the Objective-C runtime does it also provide memory management or is it just the object interactions?
It does do the memory management of the strong and the weak references of the objects.
And is it where the ARC, the automatic reference counting comes from as well?
That's what the compiler does.
Oh, the compiler does that. Okay.
Yeah.
Would other solutions outside of Objective-C and Nougat, would they also have to use the Objective-C runtime just to interact with the Cocoa and CocoaTouch frameworks, or can they bypass that altogether?
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think it sort of depends on what level of development the solution builds on top. Like, for example, there's the Mono Mac libraries and Mono Touch libraries for Mac and iPhone that basically brings C# and Oxygen for .NET and other .NET languages for building, Mac and iOS apps. And those basically sit on top of the Objective-C runtime and they basically abstract the Objective-C objects into .NET objects or .NET-like objects that C# and Oxygen for .NET and other .NET languages can build against. And then on the other hand, you got other compilers like Delphi for Mac, for example, which basically just uses the sort of the lower level operating system like C APIs but doesn't really interact with Cocoa as far as I understand. But they draw their own controls and things like that. And they basically they interact with the OS on sort of the similar level that that native CPU native code would interact with the OS or Windows, where like you use the OS APIs, but you don't really like use an existing UI framework or anything.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
That does make sense. So yeah, okay. So if you want to interact with Cocoa and Cocoa Touch, most of them are going to end up going through Objective-C runtime at some level or another, it sounds like.
Right, yeah. And I think the important part to point out is that Oxygen compiles directly to Objective-C runtime objects. So essentially, if you take an executable generated by Oxygen for Cocoa, and you take one generated by Objective-C, you probably can't tell them apart. I mean, unless you're Carlo and you know like the details of what the compiler tweaks here and there. But other than that, they generate the exact same thing. And the classes you generate are Objective-C runtime classes, and the runtime can't tell them apart. And all the classes you work with, you just work with seamlessly.
One small thing to add there is that Objective-C code can use our Nougat code like it's any other class.
Okay, so you could build a framework with Nougat and share it with Objective-C developers, and they would not know that they were consuming a Nougat framework.
Exactly, yeah.
Excellent, that's great. So now we talked about Nougat works with the Cocoa and Cocoa Touch frameworks, which are the frameworks for Mac, OS X, and iOS development. Are we restricted to only working with those frameworks, or can we work with third-party frameworks, or maybe go with a game library that's not even interacting with Cocoa Touch at all?
No, of course, yeah. I mean, first of all, I mean, Cocoa and Cocoa Touch are sort of abstract sort of names that are abused anyway. I mean, Cocoa is really just like one framework of like literally 130 or so that ship with macOS. And obviously, Nougat can use all of those. And yeah, you can also import your own, you can use your own frameworks you might have created with Objective-C or third-party frameworks, be them commercial like our Data Abstract, or open source ones like Coreplot, for example, or libsqlite, things like that.
And I know some game developers are looking at Nougat very eagerly because they want to use it for game development and being able to use a language they like, and especially a language that they can target both Java and iOS with, and excited about that feature with Nougat.
Right, yeah.
Which I don't know a lot about game development, but apparently, yes, you can use Nougat for that.
Of course, yeah. I mean, I'm not familiar with any specific frameworks there either, but basically any framework that's out there, you can use with Nougat.
So earlier you mentioned that other cross-platform type solutions have some sort of abstraction, it sounds like, where they're either trying to make, for example, with the case of Mono, they're saying you're making the Cocoa objects appear to be .NET objects and vice versa. How does Nougat have anything like that in there, or is it what kind of abstraction layers are there with Nougat?
Well, basically none, as I said before. So, I mean, the classes you talk to are exactly the Objective-C classes, or really the Objective-C runtime classes, because at this stage you don't really care or know whether they're written in Objective-C or, say, Nougat, right? So you talk directly to those classes, and the classes you write and compile, they compile directly to Objective-C classes. So you can take any runtime class, say UI button, and you just create a descendant, and you compile that, and to the runtime, that looks like a regular UI button descendant. So there's nothing in between where you can call the UI buttons methods directly, or there's a translation layer where you gotta like, oh, what's this method called for Nougat or anything like that?
You know, I saw the announcement for Beta 3 go out, it reminded me back to PDC, I can't remember which one it was, where Prism was announced.
2008,
which was the first
yeah.
Time I started, yeah, 08, which was the first time I started using Oxygen for .NET compiler. And I was sitting in one of those sessions, and they were talking about some new features of the latest version of the .NET framework. And previously, I'd been to PDC when I was using Delphi for .NET. I was like, oh, I can't wait for them to have access to this in Delphi for .NET, which is a year out or so, because they were about a year behind. And then it occurred to me that with the way Oxygen for .NET worked, I could use everything they were showing on stage today. I didn't have to wait for a new release of Oxygen for .NET or Prism to come out at the time, that it was available right away because there was none of that abstraction layer. So I realized that was the same thing. It was also true for Nougat, is that because Nougat sits right there on top of it. It doesn't have any abstractions there. I don't have to wait for someone to do a header translation or anything like that.
Exactly, yeah. So, like, say, in a couple of weeks or so, we were assuming that, I don't know, macOS 10.9 is going to come out, right? So, ideally, all you have to do is you download the SDK from Apple, you drag it into Nougat, and Nougat is going to start using the new SDK, and all the new functions and new classes and all the new stuff that's there is going to be there for you for the taking.
Yeah. Well, in this, when I remember when Jelly Bean came out for Android development, it was just, you know, download the SDK. Hey, it works. It was just all ready to go.
Exactly, yeah.
So I suppose if there was something that was a significant enough change, we might release updated templates or something like that, but there would really be, those would just be convenience sake. They wouldn't be actually holding anybody back from using it, would they?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, that's assuming, like, I know Apple doesn't introduce, like, huge SDK breaking changes with the next version, but, like, so far they haven't done that in, like, for the first 5 or 6 releases back, and we've been testing our tool chain with all the different releases. I think iOS we go back to version 5, and OS 10 we go back to version 10.6, and basically all of those Nougat just handles just transparently and doesn't even care which one's which as long as it finds the right stuff.
But, like, when they introduced Arc, or if they did something like that, we could release new templates that took more advantage of a feature like that, maybe, or, but yeah.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. But as Carlos said, I mean, Arc is really a compiler level feature. I mean, there's like support for it in the runtime, but in theory, you could just write code without Arc and it would just work. So basically, it's just compiler magic that does the reference counting for you, compared to where before Arc, you, in Objective-C, you'd have to do the retain release yourself. But it's not really a change in the SDKs on that level.
So speaking of Arc, is as a developer, is that just going to be magic and I don't need to know about that? Or is there stuff I can do to screw it up? Or are there things I need to follow to make sure I'm taking advantage of Arc?
I'd say in 90% of the cases, it's just going to basically the same as garbage collection in .NET and Java. You just write your code. You don't worry about releasing anything or freeing objects and stuff like that. And it's just going to work. It's just, I mean, that's going to be a couple corner cases where it's going to become clear that it's not garbage collection. The most important one is what's called retain cycles, where basically garbage collection sort of has a higher level view of all the objects and it knows which objects are used and which objects aren't. Even if you have like a cluster of objects that still reference each other, garbage collection knows, hey, this entire cluster is on its own and no one can reach it, so I can do away with that. Where reference counting is more traditional, that it actually keeps track of the lifetime with a counter on each object. So you can have a scenario where you thought you let go of an object, but there's still like 3 objects that have references to each other and they sort of keep each other alive. So in those special cases, you might have to do a little extra work to keep track of that. And there's a couple of language features that maybe Carlo can talk about, that help with that. And of course, we get support for instruments, the excellent profiler that comes with Xcode. For finding these, or in general for profiling your app and finding memory, figuring out memory load and things like that.
So is that the weak references you mentioned earlier, Carlo, that Mark's alluding to?
Yeah, there are modifiers for type names where you can apply strong or weak to a type, and it tells the compiler if it's a weak reference, which means it won't be counted as a proper reference, but as long as the target object is alive, you can use it. And there's another few that are pretty rare to use, but really weak and strong are the important ones.
So as far as retain and release goes, that's not something we're going to need to call in our code, or we don't want to call in our code, then, it sounds like?
You can't call it. The compiler does all that for you.
Oh, great. When I first started learning Objective-C, it was right before Arc, and that was a pain. It wasn't terrible, but you had to remember the pattern to use. Mark, you mentioned that we can use Cocoa and Cocoa Touch or any other frameworks. And so from a user's point of view, or as a developer, if we choose to use Cocoa Touch, then from a user's point of view, that's going to give us a consistent look and feel across from our apps to other apps on the platform, right?
Right, yeah. So you're going to be using the exact same controls in that case. So your UI table view is going to be a UI table view and not something that we draw for you that somewhat looks like a UI table view but doesn't, right? So and that goes for all the controls. I mean, you're literally using the exact same same controls and lower level classes as well as Objective-C would. Yeah.
So I've noticed that on when I'm using downloading apps, most apps on iOS, even more so on iOS than Android, I would say, are very consistent in the way they behave and the way they look, because they all meet that same or they use the same controls and they work the same way. But there are some apps that don't follow that because they're using they're trying to go for some sort of specialized skinning or theming or something like that. So would we be able to use Nougat to develop those non-traditional apps as well that are skinned or whatever?
Well, I mean, sure. I mean, first of all, I mean that's great support for skinning inside UIKit. UIKit is basically the framework that controls all the standard UI controls for iOS. So that's great skinning in there. So you can use the standard controls and still like make the buttons have your colors and your textures. And as a matter of fact, that's what most of the like the popular apps you find in the App Store that look really nice and smooth and set themselves apart, but still have the same sort of look and feel, even though they don't have the same look and feel. And they all use that. They use the standard buttons, the standard table views and all that stuff. And they just theme them differently. So obviously you can do that. But of course you can always go ahead and say, okay, just give me an empty UI view and I'm going to draw all my own stuff in there. Right. So if you want something that isn't in the UIKit, or if you want your stuff to behave weirdly, then by all means, sure.
So what does a developer need to get started with Nougat as far as hardware goes? What kind of requirements are there for them?
Well, basically they need a Mac, and that's pretty much it. I mean, maybe an iOS device if you want to develop for iOS. But you do need... and you need Windows in a virtual machine, at least right now, because Nougat, like all the other Oxygen flavors, is inside Visual Studio. That's what we're focusing in for the first release. So you do need Windows either on a separate computer or, as I use it myself, which works really nicely, just in a VM. You just run it in a window on your Mac. But that's basically all you need. And then on the software side, you need Xcode, which is free from Apple, or you can get the $199 iOS or a Mac developer accounts if you want to have access to betas and deploy to devices and stuff like that. But either way, I mean, it's either cheap or really low priced on the Xcode side.
So the $199 gives you... You have to have that in order
Sorry, it's $99. It's $100, so $99 each for either iOS or Mac.
And you need to have that if you want to get your app in the App Store, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. And so actually, if you want to be both the Apple App Store on the Mac for Mac development and iOS, you'd need both then?
Yeah, if you want to do both, then you need both. Though, of course, mind you can build Mac apps without being in the developer program. You just can't put them in the App Store. You can just sell them off your website or whatever.
Right. And I guess you could develop an iOS app and release it open source, but you could never deploy it to a device without being in the app the program as well, right?
Yeah, so you do get the simulator with the free Xcode, so you can test your app in the simulator, but in reality, I mean, if you haven't tested your app on your device, you haven't tested it, so
yeah,
you really do need a device to do some testing on.
And that's a good point, that the it's a simulator, and so there is actually quite a few differences between the device and the simulator, especially in performance.
Especially, yeah. I mean, mind you, the simulator is a great tool for doing the day-to-day testing, like make a change, does this button look good, stuff like that. But for the real look and feel, you want to be on a real device to really see, like, how does my application interact? Like, what's the exact sizes? How do my thumbs fit on this view I've designed? Stuff like that.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Well, and personally, I found that once you put it on the device and you're actually using it on the device, it just gives you a whole new... It's like, wow, look, it's real. You know?
Yeah.
It exists now.
Yeah, the one thing I've run into is anything that requires multi-touch. The simulator can sort of do things, but you don't have a clue how it's actually working, and with multi-touch, pinching and dragging and rotating and stuff is just... The simulator just doesn't do it.
Yeah, so
agreed.
Yeah. Is it hold the control key to do simulate multi-touch? Is that what it is on simulator?
I think it's option. But to be honest, I do so little stuff with multi-touch. I never really use that, but yeah.
Okay, option.
I think it's option.
Which is the alt key, yeah. So, Brian, actually, I was just going to ask you, what are some changes, since we're still in Visual Studio, what are some changes to the Visual Studio integration to work with NuGet and the fact that it somehow talks to a Mac behind the scenes?
Well, I think the only thing that you'll notice is that there is a, on your menu bar, or on the toolbars, there is a crossbox entry. A crossbox is the technology that allows us to talk back and forth between the PC and the Mac to, there are certain parts of the compile process that happen to have to happen on the Mac side. So it's, that's the one thing you'll notice is if there's a menu that allows you to pick which Mac you're talking to and which connected device you're talking to. If for instance, if you've got your iPad or whatever attached, it'll show you that you can talk to that directly and deploy things. But as far as the rest of the IDE goes, there's not a lot of difference. It goes back to that most things in Oxygen work the same no matter what flavor you're in.
Mm-hmm.
Things look a little different. Like for instance, there's some support for the multi-part methods where you could tab between the various arguments to make it easier to fill things in. But there's not, it just feels like you're working with Oxygen. There's not a lot of difference to it.
Cool.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference is going to be that your project icons are going to be green instead of blue.
Well, that's the way it should be, right?
Yeah.
The biggest difference should be the aesthetics. So Crossbox is cool because it allows you to test and deploy against your Mac from Windows. And now Crossbox is also being used for Android development in Cooper too. Is that correct?
Well, actually, we're not using Crossbox per se yet. So as in, you can't like connect your Android device to your Mac yet and talk to Crossbox, but we started using the same menu where instead of selecting your Mac and your iPhone and your iPad where you deploy to or build for, you can select your Android device when you're building Android projects. And in the long run, we also want to truly enable Crossbox so that you can plug in your Android device or run your emulator for Android on your Mac, for example, and then connect to that. But we're not doing that yet. Right now we're focusing, for the core Crossbox, we're focusing on getting NuGet out first before we put extra stuff in there. But we did put the local Android device selection into the Crossbox menu in the last release in January. Sort of to unify things a little bit there.
Now you'd mentioned that you need to have a Mac and then you can run Windows inside a virtual machine to do NuGet development. Will the NuGet command line compiler run straight up on the Mac?
Sure, yeah. As a matter of fact, I don't think it does in the current beta, simply because we haven't really put emphasis on getting that to work with the Crossbox toolchain and all that, but sometime in the next few betas, or at least by RTM, you definitely can use the Oxygen command line compiler on the Mac to build your project.
Okay, so if someone's, I know I've talked to a couple of developers that are very diehard Mac, and they don't want to run a Windows virtual machine even.
Yeah, I mean, if I had my choice, I wouldn't either, but there's only so much things we can do for 1.0. Right?
Sure, yeah. Yeah. Now, also, there's a couple services I've seen that provide a cloud-based Mac. Is that something you can still use with Crossbox?
Of course, yeah. I mean, obviously, you're going to lose the option of, like, plugging in your iPhone or anything to the cloud-based Mac, I would assume. But yeah, I mean, as far as building for Mac or building for the simulator and testing in the simulator, and even, I guess, building for the devices and putting stuff in the store, that would definitely work with those services. So you could, I know that Mac Mini Colo is one famous one where you just send them your Mac Mini or you rent one from them and they put them in a rack somewhere. And I think there's another one where you sort of rent virtual, where you can rent by the hour access to Mac hardware, I think Mac and Cloud or something like that. So those would definitely work. Yeah. I mean, obviously, without like, it's not quite the same experience as sitting in front of your Mac testing your stuff, but it's definitely going to be a something that, that can be done as a like first step if you're not sure yet if you want to invest that money and get the Mac.
So it would just be a matter of installing CrossBox on the other Mac, and then you could connect to it and use it.
Exactly, yeah.
So how does, in the NuGet development process, how will the user interface design be accomplished? Is that something that we're putting in Visual Studio, or is that some other way?
No, that's actually done in inside Xcode. So basically, Mac and iOS have two different ways to do a UI. There's zip files, which work both for Mac and for iOS. And then last year, Apple introduced storyboards, which is sort of a more of a fancier version of zip files that right now is iOS only. And we're going to support both of those. So we do have templates that include those. And I mean, again, as I said before, you work with the standard classes, right? So if there's a class that works off a storyboard, then it sort of goes without saying that that's going to work with NuGet as well. But then to edit those zips or those storyboards, you do that in Xcode, in the interface builder designer, so that you get full access to all the controls that it knows, and basically the full design experience. And also importantly, like as I said before, like when the next version of some SDK comes out, like say iOS 7 or OS 10.9, you want the latest controls that are going to be new in that version to be usable with NuGet right away. And using those native designers is going to ensure that, because if you load your storyboard or your zip file in that new version of Xcode, then that's going to know about all the new controls in the new SDK already.
So could you also use the core data designers for building core data into your app with NuGet?
I would assume so. I gotta admit, core data isn't something I've worked with much, so I haven't really played with that yet. But in theory, that should definitely work, and it's definitely something we gotta look into and make sure it works before we ship. But I don't see why it shouldn't.
Okay. Now, earlier, Mark, you'd mentioned instruments. What is Can you go into more detail about instruments and how that works with NuGet apps?
Sure. So, I mean, basically, instruments is the profiler that comes with Xcode, and it's a really great tool. So, I don't know if you ever used any profilers on, I don't know, .NET or Java or Delphi, and you said, this kind of sucks. I don't want to profile. This is completely different. I mean, instruments is really awesome, and it's fast, and it's responsive, and it gives you amazing insight into what's going on in your app, whether it's memory load or what is being allocated, what isn't being deallocated, or performance, like what methods am I being stuck in, where am I spending my time, stuff like that, down to even, I mean, stuff I don't really use, but like debugging, like itty-gritty, what's going on in my OpenGL things and stuff like that. So it's really a well-versed tool for basically understanding any or all aspects of what's going on in your application. And basically, it's just going to work seamlessly with NuGet. So we actually added an extra menu item in Visual Studio. We can just say start in instruments. Just instead of start with debugger, you can say start with instruments. And up is going to come instruments on your Mac, and it's going to start running the app. As I believe you showed in your video that we put out yesterday. Yeah. But basically, that's like, we didn't really have to do anything special on that front, short of adding that menu item there. Because, as I said before, I mean, the executables we generate are truly native Objective-C executables. So instruments is just going to eat them up and not even going to care whether they're written in Oxygen or in Objective-C. And it's just going to run them and profile them and give you all the same details and all the same information that you get from running an Objective-C application, including like call stacks, drilling into your source, seeing what lines get hit, stuff like that.
Okay, excellent. With Cooper, we introduced a new feature to Oxidizer. So previously, Oxidizer would do C# to Oxygen code. And then with Cooper, we had Java to Oxygen code. Do we think there will be a Objective-C to Oxygen code, or is that maybe a 2.0 feature?
I can't wait for it, yeah. I mean, we definitely want to do that. It's just a matter of we haven't done yet because we haven't found a way to clone Carlo yet. But...
So that's a compiler-type level feature that Carlo would be working on.
Well, it's not really compiler-type, but I mean, basically Carlo implemented all the Objective-C and C parsing already for consuming the SDK.
Oh.
So it's sort of a matter of getting that stuff sort of abstracted and passed on to whoever is going to do the oxidizer, so we don't really have to, we don't want to reinvent the wheel for that. I mean, especially not with something as complex as C and Objective-C to parse. We really got to leverage what we already have there, but it's just a matter of finding the time to put it in there.
Now, I'm not an expert in C type languages, but it would seem like those are get into a lot of really obscure corners and crazy stuff you can do with that. It would seem like, would the Objective-C to oxidizer be a subset of what you can do with that, or would it try and support all of the C domain?
Well, obviously I want to make as much as I can work, but there will be constructs that just don't work in Oxygen, like the C inline assignment operator. I'll probably try to extract it, but I don't think it's going to work in every case because it just doesn't exist in Pascal.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess to a degree that's true with the C-sharp and the Java oxidizer as well right now, where like certain for loops is going to convert to a while loop because obviously for loops in Pascal are a little more, let's say, purpose-driven than for loops in C-based languages. Or, and again, you don't have the inline assignment or the plus equal for increment, things like that.
Mm-hmm. I found in the past when I use oxidizer with for Java or for C-sharp, usually it gets me between 90 to 99% of the way there as far as getting the code there. And it's usually straightforward. I just need to look at it, and it's like, oh, yeah, this is this and this is that, and then I'm there. It's good to go. So it does the busy work for me, which I appreciate.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, in Nougat's compiler, it gives an option for ARM v7 and ARM v7s. What exactly are the differences, and why would you choose one over the other versus both?
To be honest, I couldn't really tell you what the like concrete hardware level differences are. Basically, ARM v7s is the new CPU that's in the iPhone 5 and the new iPad 4, and ARM v7 is the CPU, or the class of CPU that's been in anything since, I think, the 3GS and the first iPad. So basically, I guess one way to say is, look at it is if you compile for ARM v7s, there's going to be some sort of optimizations done for the more advanced CPU in the newer devices, which I guess probably like a better floating point or whatever. I mean, I'm not really a CPU guy, so I don't know the exact concrete differences, but basically that's it.
So if I build just ARM v7 app, will it run on the newest generation of devices as well, or will it not run as well?
Yeah, it's going to run fine.
It just won't be as fast, possibly.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, I'm betting unless you're like using something specifically that's optimized in v7s, you're probably not going to see a difference either. But I don't know, I guess it can't hurt to build for. I mean, Apple definitely has Xcode changed to build for both by default for new projects since the iPhone 5 has been out. So I think they probably, you would think they wouldn't have done that if it wouldn't make sense, if there wouldn't be substantial relevant optimizations that are being done for v7s. But one way to find out would be to use instruments to run your app.
There you go. I guess that would do it, wouldn't run on your iPhone 5 and see what instrument says. What exactly, if I do a hybrid app, is it compiling it twice and just putting both binaries in there, or is it doing some way of combining the two, or how does that work?
Yeah, so basically it's building what's called a universal binary in OS X and iOS terms. So it's basically building two versions of the executable, one for ARM v7, one for ARM v7s, and it's going to put both of those into one executable file, and then the OS is going to figure out whatever is the best version to run on the actual device. And the idea for those sort of goes back to the macOS days, where you could have universal binaries for PowerPC, 32-bit Intel, and now 64-bit Intel. Although, funnily, the only platform we support on macOS right now is the 64-bit Intel, because that's the only really modern platform left for macOS. So, ironically, we don't have universal binary support on macOS. Or we do have it like under the hood, but there's really no way to get to it because there's no other CPU except x64 that makes sense right now.
Right.
Of course, that all might change in a couple of years if if rumors are true and Apple is going to introduce ARM support for OS X at some stage, then you would have the option to build x64 and ARM universal binaries possibly for your Mac applications. Who knows?
Yeah, I was just going to ask about that. So yeah, we already got the ARM compiler for iOS, so yeah, we're almost there.
Matter of fact, that's probably going to work pretty seamlessly out of the box if a new SDK would come out that would support that, I would assume.
Cool, yeah.
Oh, maybe one point to make here is not to confuse the two terms. What we talked about now is universal binaries, and Apple also introduced the term universal applications. And when they say that, they mean apps that run on either the iPhone and the iPad with appropriate UI, and those really don't really have anything in common technically, because it's the same CPU, obviously, in iPhone and iPad, and they just use, you know, different zip files or whatever, different code to build different UI, but they sort of confuse the word universal a little bit with those two terms. Just getting that out there, so
that's a people know good differentiation. It's actually that interesting point. When you build a app bundle, it's called a bundle for iOS. It's got multiple parts inside of it. So if you're doing a universal where it has both the V7 and the V7S binary, that's still bundled together into one bundle. What else is in that bundle besides that?
Well, actually, the binary is actually going to be combined into one physical file, and that's going to be a universal binary. But regardless of whether you're building a universal binary or not, you can decide to build a universal app. And all that really means is that inside your code, you take care of, I don't know, launching slightly different UI, whether you're running on an iPhone or on an iPad. Because, like, if you only mark your application, like, for, I'm an iPhone app, then if you run it on the iPad, you get this little thing in the middle of the screen that looks kind of crappy, right? But if you mark your app as this universal for iPhone and iPad, then it's going to potentially be able to present full screen proper iPad UI when run on iPad. And that's the universal application part. And that's really regardless of whether you're building a universal binary for ARMv7 or an ARMv7S. It's sort of two completely separate topics.
Okay. So you started working on a Sugar project a while back. What exactly is Sugar, and how does that fit into all these different flavors of Oxygen?
So basically, Sugar is a library that we're working on. It's going to be an open source library. Right now, it's still private, but hopefully, we're going to open it up in the next couple of weeks or so. And the idea is to sort of provide a base class library that works on all the three platforms. So right now, on each platform, you have the different classes provided by the framework, right? So if you want to use a dictionary on .NET, you got to use a system.collections.generic.dictionary, right? And on Java, you gotta use, I don't know, say java.lang.map or .hashtable or whatever strikes your fancy. And then on iOS or macOS, you would use an NS dictionary. And the code that you write obviously would be different because those three classes don't look anything alike, right? And the idea for Sugar is to provide a common abstraction for classes on this this sort of level, dictionaries, internet access, encryption, stuff like that. So I'm not talking UI or anything fancy, but sort of the basic building blocks for like building your business logic, dealing with strings and math and containers and stuff like that. And have a common set of APIs. So instead of writing code that works with a system.collection.generic.dictionary or with an NS dictionary, you write code that works with a sugar.dictionary or whatever it's going to end up being called when it's done. And that code is going to compile for all three platforms. And under the hood, it's going to use the proper dictionary classes on the platforms. But you have one on the code level, you write one set of code that can compile for all three. And of course, dictionary is just one example of, I don't know, maybe 50, 60, 70 or so classes we're going to hopefully have at some stage.
Carlo, I know that Sugar uses the lots of map classes internally. What exactly is a mapped class?
A mapped class is a wrapper around another class. But if you use it, the compiler replaces the code with the real code, so you never have an extra class or something. It's like you use NS dictionary or the .NET dictionary directly, but with one set of calls.
So even though your code's using a sugar.dictionary, as far as the compiler is concerned, it's just like you use the NS dictionary directly.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So it reduces, it takes the abstraction out. The abstraction is just a syntax sugar, if you would, for the developer's point of view.
Exactly. So for example, you could say, like your code might say new sugar.dictionary and then my dictionary.add A comma B, and then that's going to translate to, new NS dictionary, dictionary add value B for key A, right? And all that's going to happen underneath the hood. So you write one set of code, but under the hood, your code isn't dealing with some abstraction class that's actually there at runtime, but your code is talking straight to the NS dictionary. And one of the upsides to that is that if you talk up, if your lower level code where you would use that you want to share between the platforms talks to, say, your higher level classes that are specific to the platform, say, to display that in the NS dictionary or whatever, then you can pass those as NS dictionary. So you don't have to convert them back and forth, because under the hood, it is an NS dictionary, right?
Oh, wow. So even though in your code, I've made a sugar dictionary, I can pass it to something that's expecting an NS dictionary in the Cocoa framework.
Exactly. And the other way around as well. So if you if the Mac version of your class uses dictionary from file to load the dictionary from disk, and then you can pass it to your generic code that does some processing on the dictionary, and that code could use sugar.dictionary. And as a result, what you get out, you can just treat as another NS dictionary again and save back to disk or whatever you want to do.
Okay, that's a really cool feature.
It is, yeah.
I remember in doing .NET development years ago, and it seemed like all the time, everything I had to convert from different types to another just because this guy takes this type of parameter, this guy gave him this type of parameter. But if it was map classes, it could have just... Because usually it's the same thing, it's just in a different interface, essentially. So with map classes, it just eliminates that need to do that conversion. That's very cool.
Consisting of thinking and remembering what it was like in the mid-70s writing code for an IBM mainframe that multitasked on a 64K machine. The sort of things that we did then. If I'd heard this podcast then, I'd think it was total science fiction.
Indeed.
There's so much stuff that happens today that just, a few years ago would have totally blew our minds. For example, my 9-year-old daughter got a survey about, a little more about her for her class at school. And I guess 8-year-old daughter, sorry. And one of the questions was, what's your favorite station on Pandora? I was just like, whoa, that's crazy.
Yeah.
My 1-year-old granddaughter is already playing with iPhones. And doing all the multi-finger touches, the lot.
Yep,
that's just one.
Yeah, yeah. It's science fiction. And then the crazy thing is, in 10 years, it's going to sound like science fiction from our perspective today, for sure. Even back when I first came on at Rim Objects, and we just had Oxygen for .NET, the idea of having Oxygen for Android, I mean, that would have been awesome, crazy. I never would have conceived of that. And then when you guys announced NuGet, I was like, oh my goodness, I didn't even think about it. That's a great idea, It's just, it's crazy how fast things change, and then once they're here, it makes perfect sense.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mark and Carlo like living on the bleeding edge.
Yeah, definitely.
And, I've noticed that... definitely the Cocoa and Cocoa Touch is something that Mark's very passionate about, because I certainly see you're very excited about the NuGet and the stuff that's going on with that.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, to be honest, more than I would have thought I would be. Because, as I said, I really love working in Xcode, and I really like Objective-C, so I'm sort of surprised by how much I like Oxygen. I mean, if that sounds silly, kind of, but...
So now beta 3 is out. What sort of things can we expect to see before the release that aren't currently in beta 3? Is there anything you want to mention now? Or?
Ooh, good question. I know that Carlo has a couple nice compiler features already done for post beta 3. One of the things is boxing is going to be new, probably coming in next week's beta. Carlo, is that ready to ship for the next build? It probably is, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to have sort of generic arrays and dictionaries. So you can take, like, Coco doesn't have generics on its own, right? So you have NS array and NS dictionary as array and dictionary classes that people use, but they're not really generic. But on the other hand, it doesn't really matter because, Objective-C is more dynamic, with the ID type, which we really didn't really talk about today. But, basically what we're doing is we're adding support for letting you use NS array and NS dictionary in the generic fashion. So you can tell the compiler, this is an NS dictionary of string, comma, string. And then the compiler is going to help you enforce type checking there, things like that.
That's cool.
So those are the two things off the top of my head that I know that are coming in the next build. Other than that, I think for beta 4, we're going to look at a lot more at getting the tool chain cleaned up and getting everything fit together a little more nicely. I mean, as I wrote in my announcement, so basically beta 3, we focused on bug fixing. And while obviously there's still bugs left and we're still going to keep fixing them, for the next beta cycle, we're sort of shifting focus back and looking into what are the missing features that we still want to put in. Like, I don't know. There could be more verification done as you try and build for your iPhone or your iPad to find stuff that isn't configured properly rather than just having the deployment fail with some obscure error because, I know, the toolchain from the Xcode side is really bad at giving proper errors back and things like that. Just in general, making the whole process even smoother. We're also looking into doing more in integrating the zip and the storyboard files with your source code. So right now, I know you showed that in your video, you can, if like a menu option to sync that puts the properties and methods you define into your zip on your storyboard so you can see them in Xcode and draw up the connections. So we have some ideas for making some further improvements there and making that even nicer. And basically, I guess lots of little things like that. So in general, beta 4 in like a month or a month and a half is just going to look a lot more smoother yet again.
Excellent. So nougat, but better.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for your time, guys. I think we'll go ahead and wrap this up here.
Thank you.
Nougat is really exciting. Everybody I'm talking to about it is very excited about it as well. So that's always good to hear. And actually, I had an idea, Mark. Maybe we might do another podcast about just development. Like you mentioned the IDE, we didn't get into that at all. And there's other things that are new to working on the Coco and CocoTouch frameworks that are specific to Nougat that maybe developers might need to know about. So maybe we'll do a podcast about that.
Sounds great, yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you for your time, and hope everybody has a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you, Jim.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.